What is up, everybody? This is the Sharp Angles Podcast. I am your host, Raymond Summerlin, to talk with you about fantasy football. Way too early, but we're going to keep doing it. And luckily, I have a very, very good guest to talk about fantasy football. We're going to do some overpriced players. We're going to talk a little bit about Jared Goff. We're going to hear hot takes about the schedule release, which is coming this week. And that is from Michael Fabiano of Sports Illustrated and the Believe Fantasy Football Show with Michael Fabiano and Lindsay Rhodes. Thank you so much for joining. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, glad to be with you, Ray, and looking forward to having a little fantasy football chat here. Even though it's middle of May,
yeah,
we cannot get enough. And I know there's a lot of people out there like that are madmen like Bob Harris who are already doing like 250 best ball drafts. So it's never too early.
Yeah, no, the content machine has to keep rolling on. And yeah, we have our Todd Burrows. I checked with him the other day to see how many drafts he's through. I think it's like 50, 60, something like that. They never stop. They never end. I've actually not done any this year yet. I haven't gotten any best ball drafts in yet, which actually is a little bit rare for me, focusing on, you know, rookie stuff and dynasty stuff. So I'm a bit behind this year if I'm going to max out the best ball mania over at Underdog.
I haven't done a ton either. Like I'm in the middle of this eliminator draft, which by the way is crazy. I mean, it's fun. I don't know if you're in those, but they basically have a theme like every, you know, year. And this year's theme is Stranger Things, and it's the upside down world, which means that good quarterbacks who throw a lot of touchdown passes and not a lot of interceptions are not as good. Like my first three picks in that eliminator draft, Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Who did I take second? I can't remember. Oh, Deshaun Watson. And then I took a Bo Nix. I don't know. I mean, it's so freaking weird. And you look at the scoring system and it's like, whoa. You're not going to learn anything from it in terms of, you know, actual fantasy football, traditional fantasy. But I'm also doing a best ball right now as well. So, I mean, I've done one best ball, doing another one here, and then doing this madness of the eliminator. But it's all for a good cause.
Yeah, no, I actually, my first kind of foray into like real odd drafting comes with the Scott Fishbowl every year. And there's always an odd scoring system to that. And it's always interesting to dive into that and figure out, all right, how does this make things different? Can you expand further on like what's making the bad quarterbacks good? Because, you know, Bo Nix, if we're talking bad quarterbacks, I don't know. Maybe
you get
good. Sean Payton seems to love him. So we'll see.
You get more points for an interception than a touchdown. You get like points for fumbles lost, like all this crazy stuff. You get more points if a kicker misses a field goal than if he gets a conversion. It's crazy town. So I mean, you know, it's like, you know, cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria, Ghostbusters reference.
That actually is really fun too, because you have to now identify. So Trevor Lawrence is interesting, because even if Trevor Lawrence is not as good as he was 2 years ago, at the end of 2 years ago, like he was last year, you still probably think he's going to have the job. So you have to find that nice sweet spot. Who's going to keep the job and also still throw 15 interceptions?
And you can start, really, like, if you want to fill your lineup with quarterbacks, you can. I mean, you can't, because people are going to eat them up. I mean, I think right now the best quarterback on the board is like Jacoby Brissett, who may or may not be the starter for the Patriots in week one. But like, I think I have three quarterbacks and like four running backs, I think. I don't know. It's a crazy... It's one of those things where you're just throwing darts, and at the end of the season, maybe you go back and check and see how you did. Who knows?
Jameis Winston, league-winning handcuff pick.
For my God. Right? Well, imagine Jameis that year that he had 33 and 30. Like, that was bananas. I'll never forget that season, too, because the final week of the fantasy season that year, Jameis was playing against Houston, if memory serves me. I remember I was out. This is when I lived in California. And I was watching the game, and I had started Jameis because he has had a couple of good games in a row. So I'm going to stick with him. And the son of a biscuit, like, threw a pick six. He may have thrown another one in that game, and he sucked. I don't remember if I won or lost because of it, but I'll never forget watching that game. I'm at a place in I think Manhattan Beach, and I'm watching Jameis Winston throw pick sixes. I'm like, mother pus bucket, this guy, another Star Wars, or another Ghostbusters reference, by the way. Yes, I do love the 80s. I'll never forget that. Yeah, Jameis Jamison is 33-30. That's one hell of a crazy headache of a fantasy football season for you. And he finished like among the best players in fantasy football at quarterback, even with the picks.
In both leagues, in both formats, that would have been that would have been the case.
He'd be awesome. Yeah. Like Brett Favre would be like the best pick. You know, Brett Favre, more interceptions thrown than any quarterback in the history of the National Football League. So he would have been a star in this league.
That's absolutely, that's a really fun scoring system. It is, you do have to get into those interesting leagues because we're right here in the doldrums of the NFL season. I continue to say I started working at Roto World a long, long time ago. And we used to have nice little pockets of breaks, and those pockets have slowly started to disappear as the NFL has taken more and more and more of the offseason. This is one of those little times. The one little thing we do have coming up now, which I know you have some thoughts on, I'll let you get to them, is the schedule release, which is coming out. If you're listening to this, we're recording this on a Tuesday. It's going to be on Wednesday night. The schedule release, you know, some of them have started to leak out, like Chiefs Ravens is going to be opening night. We do a little bit with the schedule release. Mostly our stuff with the schedule release is just around like rest disparity and things like that, which is actually really interesting. Warren Sharp's done a lot of work on that. And it seems like the NFL has looked at some of the work that Warren Sharp has done. They've promised to make some changes. So this year is going to be interesting from that regard. Obviously, if you play best ball, week 16 and 17 are interesting as well. And so we're going to have some content up on the site around the schedule release. But I think you probably are with me. The schedule release is just, it's another way that the NFL is just trying to own as much of this offseason as possible. And they're going to make a big deal out of it on Wednesday night. And, you know, I'm going to probably react too strongly to a bye week. And that's just the way it is. They're going to draw me in and they're going to make me care way too much about this.
So here's my thoughts on it. And I worked for the NFL for a very long time. And I pushed the importance of the schedule and how it pertains to fantasy football. I was being a good soldier. It doesn't matter. Like, in terms of fantasy points, and it doesn't matter. Like, bye weeks matter? Yes. Does it matter what your schedule is in, like, the last 3 weeks of the season? Well, fantasy season? Because the playoffs are? Yes. But I don't know what these defenses are going to be like against quarterback. Let me give you an example. Last season, the Philadelphia Eagles, if you looked at the numbers, FPA against wide receivers in 2022, they gave up 30 points a game to wide receivers. I'm not breaking it down into like slot and wide because that'll just, it's going to be take too much. So going into this past season, if you were facing the Eagles as a wide receiver, that's not a good matchup. Not a good matchup. They gave up 45 points per game to wide receivers last season. They sucked. They were terrible. And so that was completely wrong. And then if you flip it, Carolina, 22. They gave up about 38 points per game to wide receivers. So you look at them and say, oh, it's favorable. It's okay. Last year, they gave up 27 points per game. Now, why? Because they sucked against the run. But that was a useless stat. In fact, it was a deceptive stat. And so we don't, like, the Buffalo Bills, their whole defense was, like, released or, you know, left. We don't know what that defense is going to look like. It's completely different. So when you go in and like, people will say, and I've said this too, well, you know what? You know, when there's players with similar value, you could use the strength of schedule to determine which one you, okay, that's fine. But ultimately, things are going to change. You remember a few years ago when the Washington, I think they were the football team at that point, you know, Chase Young, and their defense was really good, really, really good. And you're like, oh, damn. Following year, if you're playing the football team, that's not a good matchup. And that defense sucked. And all of a sudden, it's like, I want to play against the football team because the NFL is unpredictable. Everything changes. Cowboys defense. We got a whole new – I'm a Cowboys fan, right, if you didn't know. Maybe why I got some gray hair.
I apologize. I apologize.
It's stupid. This is stupid. I hate Jerry Jones. Anyways, Cowboys, I mean, you got a new defensive coordinator, right? You got Zimmer come back in, and you know, Quinn's obviously now in Washington. So, like, things change. You don't know what it's going to look like. You don't know what Buffalo's defense is going to look like. You have no idea. So, like, you can throw stats and stuff out there. It's the same thing as, like, strength of schedule in terms of, like, just raw wins and losses. Okay. Texans, they were supposed to be an easy game last year. Nope. Division winner. went and did some good things in the playoffs. Nope. Bottom line. So, like, you know, you could talk about it and this and that, you know, at the end of the day, and, you know, there could be some similarities in terms of, like, you know, teams, how they did against quarterback in 23 as opposed to how they're going to do in 24. And there could be some similarities, and I'm sure there will be. But ultimately, there's going to be a lot of gaps, a lot of gaps. And so take it with a grain of salt. Don't get crazy about the schedule. And even insofar as, like, the playoffs, you know, weeks 15, 16, 17, you don't know what those defenses are going to be. And we're not going to know. And I had this conversation with Tristan Cockcroft from ESPN, who's a dear friend of mine and super smart and way freaking smarter than I'll ever be. Except for he likes the Giants. And you know, I'm a little smarter than him, at least in that respect. Well, maybe not. They've won two Super Bowls since the Cowboys have been.
I was about to say, we're going to keep the Super Bowl count out there.
They do suck. Yeah. They still stink, but whatever. Anyways, bottom line here is that, like, Tristan and I were both talking about this. We agree. Like, once you get to the middle of the season, somewhere around the midway point, then you got a good feel about what these defenses are good against and what they're bad against. And then you could go into and look, okay, now what am I looking at for the fantasy playoffs? And who are the opponents? And who are the good and bad matchups? Right now, we don't know. We don't know. And anybody who says we do know is full of it. They're full of it. The bye weeks are important. I like to look at the schedule more of, like, who are my Cowboys playing? Let me look at some really good matchups, you know, like Ravens, Chiefs, you know, and the opener. Yeah, that could be, you know, that's going to be a fun game. Both defenses were really good last year, though. So you can't just go in and say, oh, this is going to be a shootout. You know, both defenses really. Cowboys, Browns. I've already talked crap to a couple of my buddies who are Browns fans and said, oh, looks like you guys are going to beat the Cowboys in week one. I'm starting to reverse jinx already because I know the Cowboys are going to disappoint me. So I like that. I like to, you know, who are the Cowboys playing on Thanksgiving? As a Cowboys fan, I like to know these things. What are the Thanksgiving, these Christmas Day games too? NFL, can you please give us a break for crying out loud? I've been doing this for over 20 years.
I can't even take Christmas Day off. Yeah. Yeah,
what the
yeah,
frick, you hit it. Man? Like, come on, dude. Like, and remember the NBA was like the you know, the NBA had
that
Christmas.
Was it.
And the NFL was like, no, we're not going to leave you alone. Know what? You know what? We're the NFL. We're the big bullies. Go spit. We're going to take your day away from you. Anyways, I'm not going to, you know, it's not like Festivus here. I'm not going to air my grievances against the NFL on this program. But bottom line here is that the schedule is fun on the surface. You check out who you're playing and when you're playing them, and we already know who everybody's playing and where they're playing.
Yeah.
So from a fantasy perspective, that's not going to help you until midway through the season.
So I agree with almost all of that. What I will say is that, just kind of like an additive to it, there's a lot of focus on week 16 and 17 in these big best ball tournaments, which makes sense, obviously. That's when you make the money. If you're able to get to those spots, it's when you make the money. And so there becomes a lot of emphasis on drafting players that are in and stacking games that we think are going to be really good mm-hmm. in those weeks. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that works out, but a lot of times it doesn't. And I mean, last week 17, we had Bengals Chiefs. So that was probably the main stacking game. And you look at that game and, you know, Joe Burrow didn't play in that game.
It was Jay Browning. Yeah, right.
Wasn't even there. Harrison Butker finished with 6 field goals. Isaiah Pacheco had a good game, but that's pretty much it. Everybody else from a fantasy perspective, mm-hmm. you know, pretty much disappointed. I guess Rashee Rice had a pretty good game as well. But you look at that game and you think, okay, well, I was so certain that was going to be the game I should stack. And I think that's kind of like, if we're going to boil it down to a more overarching fantasy principle, that certainty of what we know is going to be true is what gets you in trouble, especially if you're somebody that's listening to a fantasy football podcast today and is probably going to be drafting a lot of best ball teams. Recognizing that what you're certain about is there's a decent chance that that's not true, and trying to identify other places where you can differentiate. If everybody's wanting to stack whatever this year's versions of Bengals versus Chiefs is, whoever the Bills are playing, or, you know, whatever they're trying to stack, you can go and try to find other places. Last year, I really liked to try to stack the Texans and Titans. That didn't really work out for me. That game didn't pop off, but I mean, by the end of the year, I was feeling pretty good about that Titans defense and CJ Stroud. It just didn't happen to work out that time. If you look at the Cardinals and Eagles in week 17 last year, Cardinals won that game 35-31. If you had stacked that game, you're really looking, you know, much better. And so it's all about understanding that, yeah, we can make predictions about what's going to happen. We can use we can use better metrics than just looking at what happened last year. We can use Vegas win totals. We use Vegas over-unders to try to better understand strength of schedule, because they're not looking, you know, at the past. They're trying to actively make predictions
about the future. Yeah, and I check out Warren's stuff. I love Warren, so I'm always checking this stuff out. This is very smart stuff. But I think Warren would also agree with me with a lot of what I said. It's like, we don't know. Like, you can make educated guesses, but just how educated are they? Because if they're based on last season, you know, well, okay, this is a whole new season and stuff changes. I mean, like honestly, from a fantasy perspective, did anybody see Puka Nacua coming? I don't know. Maybe Sean McVay did. I didn't. I don't know if you did. I didn't see that. I mean, the guy.
I will say our Cup. Website was high on Puka Nacua. We're taking that victory lap. We're going to run that victory lap for a while. We were high, but not that high.
Exactly. So, you know, it's one of those, something else is going to happen this year, right? Like everybody, and you know, we're going to talk about Puka. Everyone got Puka in their top 10 wide receivers. And yeah, but are we drafting him based on his ceiling? Like, what happens if Cooper Kupp stays healthy? You know, like which is a big if. You know, so like we're all doing that kind of thing. I mean, like, hell, like you look at situations and you make predictions, and they're educated predictions in that case. And sometimes they pan out and sometimes they don't. I mean, that's fantasy football. And I would argue that's the fun of it. Because, okay, if I knew everything that was going to happen, number one, I'd be rich as hell. I wouldn't be doing this podcast. I'd be sitting someplace on a desert island with you know, a nice drink in my hand and three lovely ladies in bikinis sitting all around me, right? It'd be fun financially to be able to do that. But, like, it's more fun to predict, and, like, you're going to be wrong. And so, but I like to make my predictions based on stats and trends and educated guesses. And the schedule, I don't know how educated that is, because, like, things change. Things really change. I am a big fan. I'm going to go off on a tangent here. I'm a big fan of paranormal stuff. I love paranormal stuff. I love it. Right.
Real tangent. We're going right.
So and I'm going to throw some names out there. I'll name drop. Yep. I know Matt Deutsch knows that I like to name drop. But like Gary Barnage and D'Angelo Williams are two dear friends of mine, and they do paranormal investigations. Okay. And Gary's a skeptic.
Yeah.
And go on YouTube. It's fine. They just did one at Bobby Mackey's, which is supposed to be like the portal to hell. Okay. And so they have these devices that are supposed to pick up movement, whatever. Like, it's supposed to tell you if there's a ghost or not. And I say, Gary, how the hell do they build a device that is supposed to detect something that we don't even know is real? So it's kind of the same thing. And like, well, I'm looking at like the Eagles. I'm like, oh my God, the Eagles were really good against wide receivers a couple of years ago. I don't want to play any wide receivers against Philadelphia. And last year they sucked because we don't know what they're going to look like. We don't know if the Eagles are real or not. If they're going to continue to be tough against them, we just don't know. By the way, I went to Key West a couple of weeks ago, one of the most haunted cities in the country, and I'm trying to get Gary and D'Angelo to go do a paranormal investigation down there before football season starts. So if we do, I will make sure that I tweet out the information to everybody. You learn a little something about myself here.
You really have to twist their arm to get them to go to Key West. What a terrible destination.
But I will tell you this, though, Ray. It's hot as balls there in August.
It's so hot.
I live in Florida, and it's hot right now, and it's only May. It's cool, but it's sizzling down there.
We've actually been lucky. I live in Central Texas. We've been lucky. We've had a pretty mild run, but the streak of 100 degree days is coming like a freight train.
Yeah. Have you guys been getting a lot of bad weather there though? Like, there's been a lot of storms running through. Yeah.
It's been storming and raining. It's not supposed to do that. And I live in San Antonio, Texas. It's not supposed to do that in San Antonio. It's supposed to be dry. This is nonsense.
I haven't
been in the pool. I've been in the pool, but like once. It's been madness.
Texas, because I look over your shoulder there and I see the Astros.
Yeah, you see them.
And you see. You know what I could say about the Astros?
Let's hear it. Do it. Yeah, do it.
Fuck the Astros. I'm a Yankees fan. You guys stole that freaking championship with your knocking down the garbage cans. But I also will say this, right? we've owned you this year, but you guys have kicked the crap out of us for like the last several years. So like my hatred of the Astros has grown ever since you guys have come over to the AL and been beating the crap out of us. And part of me is bitter and jealous. So congratulations on the Astros success, but I am not shedding a tear that you guys suck this year.
Yeah, no, we're really bad this year, but I would ask, I always ask Yankees and Red Sox fans who complain about it, about, you know, Apple Watches and how all that worked out and whether they were doing the exact same
everybody,
thing.
But the Astros just got caught. Everybody cheats somewhere or another, but you know what? I just like, go. But when you look at the stats, the home and road stats in that series.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying.
I'll be really honest with you about this, is that I take, like, I love that I suddenly have a team. I've never had a team that's been the hated team. You've been a Yankees fan. You've had a team that's
all my teams have been hated. Yes. Yeah.
I've never had a team. I grew up as an Oilers fan, and obviously they moved. Ooh. And I'm not even, I have no team anymore because they left me. And so I'm an Astros fan.
Yeah.
Oh, they were so good.
I'm a Cowboys fan. I am sure. A monogamous sports fan. I don't root for anybody else unless it's against a team that's playing a team that will benefit my team if they lose, right? So, like, I hate the Red Sox. I hate the New York Giants. I hate the Astros now, although they're not really doing much at this point. I'm one of those people. I'm a Lakers fan. I grew up in early 80s, and I love Magic Johnson. I hated the Celtics. I actually hate most of the Boston teams. Like, Bruins, I don't give a rat's ass about because I don't care about hockey. But, like, I just hated those teams. I rooted for North Carolina in college basketball. Hate Duke. I hate UConn because I grew up in Connecticut. And everybody before Jim Calhoun came over, they don't know that Sam Perno was the coach before that. They didn't know who the hell any of those players were. Then they got good. They jumped on the bandwagon. Anyways, but bottom line here is that I know exactly what you're talking about because many of the teams and most of the teams that I've root for, you either love or hate. And now the Astros are like, in there. They're a team that you would love or you hate. And I remember when you guys got a hater, I'm like, mother damn it. And he hadn't really been doing much because the Astros were winning games.
Exactly. Yeah. Turns out it's fine. Turns out it doesn't matter if the rest of the bullpen can't hold it. This isn't a baseball podcast. I'm not going to air my grievances.
This is what I do, Ray. This is what I do. And Boyce knows this. I throw a wrench into everything. I take us off the rails. I just want to have some fun, man. But yeah,
no, but I don't want to. I don't want to air back on the rails. I don't want to spend 20 minutes. I don't want to spend 20 minutes with me complaining about this Astros roster.
That's right. But the Oilers, best uniform, top five uniform in the history of sports. Top five. I loved Earl Campbell growing up. Loved him. I loved Warren Moon, who's now a friend of mine. Loved Warren Moon. I love watching those Oilers uniform. The run and shoot. You know, like with Warren Moon and Haywood Jeffries and Ernest Givens. I love that stuff, man. I never rooted for the Oilers, but I loved watching them. They were a lot of fun, and those jerseys were glorious, man.
And they were so much fun when they left, which I think that hurt the most. It's like they were so much fun when they left, and I still kept rooting for them in Tennessee because I was like 12, 13 when they left.
Yeah.
And I kept rooting for the Tennessee, and then obviously they get to the Super Bowl, but you fall out of it because you're like, you left me. And then what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to support the Texans now? I mean, maybe I will become a Texans fan. Maybe I will.
But see, the Texans now are the best team in Texas.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm
saying.
They're
the best football team in Texas. They're better than the Cowboys. I can tell you that right now. Holy crap. I mean, that you want to talk about a turnaround. That team was trash a couple of years ago. Garbage. I mean, Davis Mills. The joke about the Texans was, what the hell was Bill O'Brien thinking, trading away freaking Nuke to get David Johnson, all this dumb crap that he did? Well, Deshaun Watson, I mean, whatever. But, boy, what a turnaround. Congrats to them. Some of these other teams like my Cowboys should take the Cowboys are doing nothing. Oh, let's sign Eric Kendricks. Who gives a rat's patootie? These guys are trading for Stephon Diggs. They're trading for Joe Mixon. They're bolstering their team. That team's good. I would say this. Kansas City, Cincinnati, Buffalo, you think? I mean, Buffalo probably still find a way to be good, even though we don't know what their defense is going to look like, right? I mean, the Ravens. I mean, the Texans are right up there. They're not at the elite level, but they're creeping. Might be a good time to jump on that bandwagon with Stroud.
And some of those teams you mentioned, like I've talked about this several times already this offseason. The Ravens they lost more than I think maybe we think they did. And you have some concerns about some of the holes on that roster. The Bills, you have concerns about holes on that roster. The Dolphins, you have concerns about holes on that roster. Obviously, we saw the Chiefs with their defense, but the offense wasn't humming last year. This used to be a very top-heavy kind of conference, and it still is. I mean, as long as you have Patrick Mahomes in a conference, it's going to be top-heavy. That's the way it works. Mm-hmm. But it's more open than we think. It's your point about the schedule. I mean, that we don't know. You definitely wouldn't have predicted what we saw from the Texans last year. Heading into the playoffs, I didn't think that they were going to get where they – I picked the Browns. I thought the Browns were going to win.
Yeah, everybody did, man.
Playoffs.
Everybody did.
Exactly. I played the fantasy playoffs like the Browns were going to have a chance to beat the Ravens. That didn't work out for me very well.
And that's another thing that the Texans have in their favor. Their division's not that tough. right? I mean, the Colts, yeah. You know, the Colts should be a little bit better. The Titans are going to be completely different. They should be better, right? But we're not talking about elite level teams here. Jacksonville, I mean, huge disappointment last year.
You
don't want to be in the Northern divisions. You don't want to be in the AFC North, where all four of those teams, if you predicted them to win the division, okay. Yeah, they could.
Fair.
I mean, the Browns, the Browns have a really good team. You know, I mean, if Deshaun Watson can be closer to what he was in Houston, I mean, damn, geez, Louise, that's going to be and then you got Baltimore. But we know Baltimore, roll over and show their belly in the playoffs when things matter the most. And so, you know, I don't know how far they – I mean, the Steelers – listen, Russell Wilson, they got the best quarterback situation in fantasy football. If one goes down, okay, well, I got this guy coming up next after me. The backup might be better than, you know, the starter. So that's a really tough division, but it's a benefit to Houston because I don't see too many prognosticators out there who are not picking the Texans to win that division.
Yeah, and this is something I love thinking about and talking about is think about this time last year. We thought about the Jaguars, that where they were coming off the season they were coming off of, what Trevor Lawrence had done at the end of the 2022 season. We were looking at that and we were saying, all right, this is the team that's going to dominate this division for like years to come. And now you look at them and they're at best second in the division long term, maybe third, based on what you think of the Colts roster. If Will Levis ends up being the savior, Titans fans probably hate me. Ironically, given the conversation we had about the Oilers, Titans fans hate me because I don't think Will Levis is going to be that. But if he ends up being their savior, the Jaguars fourth, it's wild based on what the Titans have done and the talent they've added to try to give Levis a chance this year. It's just, like you said, this comes back to that everything about the schedule. Things change in this league. They change this league very quickly. And this time next year, maybe we're talking about the Jaguars as, oh yeah, they're still clearly the best team. So it's wild. Speaking of things changing and also the North, we're talking about Jared Goff. Jared Goff signed a 4-year, $212 million extension, $170 million guaranteed with the Detroit Lions on Monday of this week. Another example of things can change very quickly. You know, whenever Goff was traded to the Lions, we saw that as just like a throw-in, just like, all right, this is going to be their bridge quarterback to get them
salary dump by the salary Rams. Dump. Totally. I actually posted this on X like yesterday, the day before. And listen, Goff wasn't good at the end of his time in LA, and that's why the Rams wanted to get rid of him, because they thought that they were a veteran, you know, a stud veteran quarterback away from going to the chip. And look at, I mean, Stafford got him there, and he won a championship. Yep. So, you know, the Rams did what they did, and you know, who knows what would have happened if Goff had stayed on there, but it seemed like McVay and all of the, you know, the coaches there in LA, they lost faith in him. And I thought Goff was going to be a bridge guy. Now the guy can buy any freaking bridge he wants anywhere in the world with all that dough. Right. Yeah. Jared Goff. Remember,
he's going to fix the infrastructure. Pick. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Listen, life is good if you're Jared Goff. Okay. You got a gorgeous girlfriend or wife. I don't know if they're married or not. Right. You just signed a $212 million deal. You're in a city that absolutely loves you after leaving a city that was like, don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. I apologize to Jared Goff left and right. I never thought this was going to happen. I thought the Lions at this point would already be sort of grooming their quarterback of the future. And now you got a guy who got you to the NFC Championship game. And hell, I mean, you know, the Lions didn't choke. I mean, like, you know, but maybe we're talking about a different sort of scenario. So, you know, good on Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions. Now, one of the teams that I think a lot of people like to root for if you didn't have a team to root for, a rooting interest, because they were the losers for so many years. You know, one of the few teams that went through a season and didn't win a single game. I mean, they, you know, I can go, you know, back to the Eric Hippel days and Joe, you remember Joey Harrington and brought over Scott Mitchell. Scott Mitchell had that one big year with Detroit, when they had like Herman Moore and Perriman, but they just haven't been able to get it right. Now they got it right, and they got better this offseason. So that's good. And that division is crazy, crazy good. Green Bay's crazy good, young. Like the offense is. I mean, they beat the crap out of my stupid Cowboys in the playoffs, first 7-2 in the NFL. Of course, to be in my stupid Cowboys. Sorry, I get pissed off about that. Their wide receiver group, like none of those guys are what, more than third year players. They've got two second year good tight ends. They bring in Josh Jacobs. Like, geez, the Wiz, Jordan Love looked great. And then you got the Bears who, I mean, hell, Caleb Williams, DJ Moore, you bring in Keenan Allen, you bring in DeAndre Swift, you know, the offense is going to be a lot of fun potentially. Caleb Williams got to, he's got some expectations. Like that kid, if they are not good offensively, it's going to be on him. It's going to be on him. And I love trends and patterns, and I have a lot of fun with those things. But, like, name me one quarterback outside of Carson Palmer who's actually been really good in the NFL. Like, really good. Off the top of your head, you can't. You know why? Because there ain't one. Don't give me Rodney Pete. So Caleb Williams has got a lot of pressure on him. The city of Chicago is considering him a savior. And again, like, you know, things are different. It's different personnel. It's different teams. It's different coaches. But, like, I always like to look at trends. It's like the Jets. Jets have had one 4,000-yard passer in their history since 1967. And that was Joe Namath in 1967. That's it. So, like, I didn't like Rodgers last year. Why?
I didn't know that stat.
The freaking Jets. That every year the Jets, their quarterback, something goes wrong. Like, the best fantasy quarterback they've had in the last, like, two decades is probably Ryan Fitzpatrick. That one year, he had 31 touchdown passes. But think about the Jets. Zach Wilson sucked. Mark Sanchez got him to a couple of AFC championship games. But, I mean, he's best known for the butt fumble. Sam Darnold sucked. Chad Pennington was okay. They drafted Geno Smith. He wasn't any good. He went to Seattle, and now, you know, he's decent. Towards like the end of his career. But quarterback goes to the Jets and they stink. And then Rodgers comes in and he blows out his ACL in four snaps. Oh, and I forgot to mention Brett Favre, who had 22 interceptions the year that he was playing for the, and he had 22 touchdowns, and six of them came in one game against the Arizona Cardinals. Favre was awful in New York. And then the following year, he went to Minnesota and he lit the world on fire. The Jets are cursed when it comes to quarterbacks. You can't make that argument that they're not. I reject any argument that they're not. But I'm just saying, like, I like those trends.
Your love of the paranormal is making more sense by the sentence.
But here's the thing. If I said to you, like, do not draft Sam Darnold in Dynasty, he is going to suck. Why? Jets. I was right.
Yeah.
Sanchez, same thing. The same thing about Zach Wilson.
Fair enough.
I said last year about Rodgers. He's not going to throw for 4,000 yards. He's not going to have a boatload of touchdowns. It's the Jets. And look what happened. He got hurt four snaps into the season. And I don't love him this year either because he still plays for the Jets. Although the Jets made a very good decision. They went back to the old Jets logo. Oh, those are glorious, man. Those are beautiful. Anyways, that's me going on my tangent.
I thought the good decision was going to be Olu Fashanu in the first round, but I really like that it's the logo. That is
no, that's not a sexy name from a fantasy perspective. I mean, like, you know, but I'm into jerseys too. If you didn't, I got a lot of helmets behind.
Yeah, I remember.
I got a whole bunch more over there, and I love jerseys and you know, helmets and all that kind of stuff. The Jets 80s jerseys, they're glorious. They're beautiful. I'm very happy about the Jets going back to the. The old Jets logo on the side. There's some teams they should never change. Miami Dolphins should have never changed from the 70s. Should still be the same logo. That stupid dolphin they got at the side of the helmet, it's dumb. I hate it. Go back to the old school stuff, right? I wish there was a way to get the Oilers back. I wish the Texans weren't the Texans. I was like, go to Tennessee and say, hey guys, let's go out for a beer. We'll talk about how we can take the Oilers name over, right? Because the Tennessee Oilers, does that make any sense? No. And then they changed to the Titans. And now you got the Oilers out there. You got this beautiful name. You got a beautiful helmet. You got a blue, beautiful, you know, love your blues, the jerseys, everything. You can't use them. It's too bad. Yeah. And the Texans stuff, I can take it or leave it, I guess.
It's fine. I have no really strong uniform takes. My only strong uniform take I've ever had is about, do you remember those terrible Color Rush uniforms? Ruined my life.
Remember the Jets and Bills game? It was Jets green and Buffalo red. And it was like a Christmas like themed game. But if you're colorblind, you don't know which what. No, I remember that. And then the Jaguars had the ugly ass mustard colored uniforms. Ugh. The Seahawks. It looks like the antifreeze color. They're awful. Terrible.
Look like Oregon football out there.
It's terrible.
But my only real, I think, hot take is I think that the Patriot logo should be the old school Patriot logo.
That is not a hot take, brother. The Patriot is awesome.
Yeah.
The Elvis logo so got him, what, seven, six championships or whatever
fair
it
enough.
Was?
Yeah, fair enough.
But not for nothing. Pat the Patriot should be brought back permanently. Yeah, it should be brought back permanently. Just like the old Dolphin helmet from like the 70s, yeah, the Greasy era, you know, and Mercury Morris and Zonka. Yes. No name defense. Yes. Give me that. Give me that helmet. Love that helmet. There have been some changes that have been good. For the most part, when you try to change things, it doesn't really work out. And we've seen that with that. Now they're doing all these crazy, like you can have all these alternate helmets. Like, I don't even have any money. I can't spend any more money on freaking helmets. I don't have any more room in my house.
Do you have the shelf space? I was about to say, do you have the shelf space?
No, it's all full. Great. It's all full. I must have like 60 helmets, and I got some in my closet. I can't even fit them all. So I don't want to buy any more of these. And you know what I did? Hold on, let me show you something. And this is my fault. Mm-hmm. I bought this one right now.
Yeah.
This helmet, I love the face mask and the color. It's cool. The logo looks like a kindergartner drew it, but this was like a really old Lions logo. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? It's probably going to end up being something they use, you know, once or twice, and then they don't use it anymore, which is going to be exactly what it is. Cause now they got another different one.
Yep.
And it's like, I don't know where the hell it is. I got all these helmets everywhere. Where are the Lions at? Oh, it's up there. I can't reach it. But now they have the blue face mask, which actually is cool. So anyways, I dig this stuff, man. Like, I'm dug in when it comes to these colors and the helmets and the uniforms. And let me apologize to you in Deutsch, because I have gone completely off the rails with a lot of this stuff. But hopefully people will enjoy a little bit of it.
I have one more thing on the Lions, that Lions helmet. I'm a big history nerd. That was one of the things I studied in college. Mm-hmm. And every time I look at that helmet, all I see is the shield of some Anglo-Saxon king in England in 1984. Like, that looks...
Yeah,
that
wait, looks the old exactly one? Or like, the old logo or the new... Oh, I'm gonna, hang on, I get it.
The one that you just held up. Right. The one that you just held up.
So, yeah. Because remember, this lion is actually cool. They used to have it. It was like just all blue. And just like to your point. And it looked crappy. Like, this lion's actually good. It like looks ferocious. Like, it's going to come.
No, but the one you held up before, the one that's behind you on the ground, that one, that looks like it came off the bow tapestry. Like, that looks like that looks like Harold Godwinson just got shot in the neck. That is exactly what that logo looks like.
I'm the
only person that thinks that.
You know what, so too? I have both the Oilers old helmets back here too. I got the powder blue one. Hold on a second. Let me see. I know you're getting
you
mad
got to
at
mail me.
Me
one. Oh, it's so pretty.
Look how glorious that is. And then the other one is with the red face mask, but I can't reach it. It's too far. And Deutsch is gonna get pissed at me. So
he's already I can already sense him typing to me. All
right, Matt, are you mad right now? Are you pissed at me right now? Are you like, God damn it, I should have never interviewed this Fabiano? I never should have brought him on. He's a pain in the ass. I mean, you should have known that from my time at Sirius. So
he's talking to our producer Matt behind.
He's trying to say, are we going to use this? Should we use this? Should we really use this? I don't think so.
Let's move. All right, let's do some fantasy. We'll talk fantasy. We're going to talk some overpriced players. Okay. I've taken these from. We actually have an interesting kind of rankings that's looking at players at ADP, trying to be more actionable and saying, all right, this is where this player is being drafted. At this point, is this player overpriced? Are they underpriced? Are they someone you should reach for? Are there somebody that you're going to let fall a couple rounds for you take them? It's been put together by our best ball guru, Todd Burrows. And so I've taken these from Todd's best ball rankings and looking at kind of where they are. And I want to get started with Puka Nacua here. Puka Nacua, as you mentioned kind of a little while ago, Puka Nacua, the wide receiver sixth. He's a first-round pick, taken 9.4 is his ADP. And you kind of mentioned at the top, so I'm going to let you expand on this. But obviously, he was outstanding as a rookie. But I think the point you made at the top, what you kind of said in passing about, is this wide receiver six, is this his ceiling with a healthy cup? I think that's really the conversation to have if we're talking about whether or not Puka Nacua is overpriced at this point.
I mean, he's coming off a near 1,500-yard season. Like, this kid broke records. Now, the touchdowns were not, you know, plentiful. He only had six. But, you know, 160 targets in an offense that's got Cooper Kupp. And again, like, you can't now expect Cooper Kupp to play a full 17. But, I mean, if he gets you 14, you know, how much does that, you know, eat into what Nacua is going to do? Defenses have now a full year of tape on Puka and maybe learn a few things about how to stop him a little bit better. Bottom line, that you would think he's still going to be very good. But here's the thing. If I told you, hey, man, I'm looking into my crystal ball and it's very accurate, and at the end of 2024, Cooper Kupp was going to outscore Puka Nacua, it's not crazy to think that. It's not. And that scares me a little bit about Puka. Not that I won't take him. Not that I won't take him. But it scares me a little bit. Because, you know, Cooper Kupp hopefully is going to stay healthy. How much does that impact what Puka Nacua does in terms of his numbers? Because when Kupp was out, like, Nacua was going crazy. And then, you know, there were certain games where Kupp came back and Kupp didn't do anything and Nacua was still good. And then, you know, vice versa. But, I mean, Puka's wide receiver four. I mean, that, can he do it again? I don't know. I'm not sure. So I'll draft him. Do I want him in round one? I don't know. I'd probably feel a little bit better about drafting him in round two, but my guess is that people are going to be, you know, Puka crazy and they'll draft him in round one and I won't have to make that decision.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of where we're going to go. And the point is that with Puka, I think if you are drafting him that high and you're saying the upside, because if I'm drafting somebody as the wide receiver, like you said, he's six on underdog, he's four other places. If you're drafting him that high, you have to be drafting a player that could finish as the overall wide receiver one. And that is certainly possible if Cooper Kupp were to miss an extended period of time. But if we look at when they were playing together, Cooper Kupp played from week 5 to week 17 last year. Nacua averaged 5.2 catches, 78.7 yards, 4 touchdowns total over that span. He was a wide receiver 13 and half PPR scoring, which you like. I mean, that's still really good. Wide receiver 13 with Kupp there, they both got the exact same number of targets throughout that time. And even when Cooper Kupp was on the field, Nacua was still getting targeted a lot. It was still we saw that kind of that stereotypical Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense where we're just funneling it to just these two players, right? We saw that, you know, in Philadelphia a lot with AJ Brown and Devonta Smith. And so if Cooper Kupp stays healthy, it's really hard to see the pathway there for Nacua to get there. And I just don't, betting on a player to get hurt is, first of all, doesn't feel great for me, just kind of like from a moral perspective, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. also you're betting on something that literally is unpredictable. We say mm-hmm. that, okay, Cooper Kupp might not play all 17 games, but I mean, 2 years ago, Christian McCaffrey was injury prone and now here we are. And so like mm-hmm. betting on that kind of stuff and predicting that kind of stuff, injuries, it's tough. Whereas you can look at a few players that are going behind Puka Nacua, and you don't have to make those arguments. You can look at AJ Brown, who AJ Brown last year was already better than Puka Nacua was whenever, you know, Cooper Kupp was playing. You could look at Garrett Wilson, who even amidst the curse of the Jets quarterback, Garrett Wilson at least has a pathway to get to that wide receiver one spot. Nacua probably doesn't have that with a healthy Kupp, and that makes it really tough to pay those kind of prices. And to your point, I think that this is just going to get, I don't want to say worse because Puka Nacua is obviously a very good player. I'm not going to say drafting is a bad pick, but I do think as we get into August and as we get into more of, you know, the general population starting to draft, I mean, they saw what Puka did last year. They know what he did last year, and his ADP is certainly not going to go down. And so, yeah, it's a tough price to pay for him. And I'm probably not going to end up with him on many teams except, you know, the dynasty teams I was lucky to draft him on last season.
Yeah. I'm Nothing would surprise me in the NFL. Like, that's just, I've been doing this way too long. I've been watching this league for way too long to be surprised by almost anything. I mean, listen, Puka Nacua was, what, a fifth round freaking pick. Some people had Cooper Kupp as the number one receiver in fantasy football going into last season. And Puka boat raced them by like 100 points. Just, you just never know. That could flip. That could absolutely flip this year, and it would not be a surprise to anyone. And that's why, like, I'm not saying Puka Nacua is going to be a bust. I'm not going to come out and say that. I'm not going to die on that freaking hill.
Absolutely.
But, man, absolutely. I don't think there's anywhere to go but down for him. Like, there's only three more spots that he could go based on his finish last year. So if he finishes outside of the top 10, doesn't mean he's bad. Just means that he wasn't as good as he was last year and you were chasing the ceiling.
Yeah, and, like, I think that that's important. The other thing about Puka is, barring an injury for him, I do think he's probably going to be a safe pick. And maybe that's an argument for him. Maybe you're not going to bust out in your first round, because we did see last year, even with Kupp, how involved he was. He's going to be another year in and all of that. So maybe that's an argument for him. But yeah, him hitting that ceiling's tough. Another player, mm-hmm. Devin Achane or Achane, as the Cajun people I grew yeah, around.
Achane. So like, so right. Cause I was calling him Achane, which actually sounds cool, but it's actually Achan. So that's
Achan. Yeah. So well, I'm from the land of Cajuns in Texas, and they think they might call him Achan, and so I think I might stick with that. I haven't decided yet, but anyway, so the argument for Achan going RB8, which is really high for a running back of like his profile. The argument for him is pretty simple to make. I mean, did you watch what he did last year on limited touches? But the concern is obviously twofold. Was last year, his efficiency was at a level that we have never seen before. And even if he turns out to be an elite efficiency player, he's not going to be at what he was last year, which means he probably needs more touches. And the question you have is, we saw him deal with injuries last year. He's not a very, big guy, especially as running backs go. And, even if I'm not predicting an injury, because again, I don't like to try to predict injuries, my question would be, given what we saw from him last year from an injury perspective, and given his size, are the Dolphins going to be willing to give him more work? Do they want him to be right around that 10 touch? And if he is right around 10 touches, like, what does that give you for fantasy? Can he really get to like the RB8 and, the kind of second and third round turn? I just, it seems unlikely to me. This is one that I could certainly die on. This is one that could certainly get freezing cold take, because he could just, he could just run for 1,800 yards and 14 touchdowns in that offense, and I don't think anybody would really bat an eye on it. But if you're taking a running back that early at RB8 with his kind of what you would predict for him for touches, I know it's a really hard argument to make for me that he's properly priced that high.
Yeah, I have him ranked as my RB13, so I'm kind of that's a little too rich for my blood. And listen, I know Raheem Mostert is not scoring 21 touchdowns again, but Raheem Mostert is going to be involved in that offense. He's going to be. Now, if Raheem goes down, do they bring in Jalen Wright to play that role? I mean, that's certainly within the realm of possibility. Achan is explosive as hell last season. The numbers that he was putting up were like crazy town. Like every week, 30 points, 25 points. I'm like, geez Louise. I mean, this guy is insane, right? I mean, he was, in terms of points per game, he was right up there. He was like top five. Although Mostert was a little bit better than him on a points per game basis. And Achan did slow down after that crazy good start that he had. Yeah, first round's too rich for me for him. I'd rather go second round. He's in it. Listen, I mean, he's in the committee with Mostert. And Mostert just got a new two-year extension. So the Dolphins dig him, obviously. McDaniels has that relationship with him from back in their time in San Francisco. And they drafted Jalen Wright. I think there's going to be some really big pop games for Achan, but there's also going to be some games where, the touches aren't there, and Mostert gets the goal line opportunities, and it's going to be a bit up and down. The good thing is that he is in an offense, like you said, that's like wicked explosive. So and now they bring OBJ, and I mean, I don't know if that really matters. I mean, OBJ is, a shell of what he was when he was with the G-men, but that offense is still going to be sick, and Achan's going to put up numbers. Is he going to put up numbers on a consistent basis worthy of being a top 12 pick? Not so sure.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, to be fair, kind of take the devil's advocate point of this. That was also my argument for Jahmyr Gibbs last year, and that ended up being wrong, and I ended up missing it. And so I do.
But not in the first half. In the first half of the season, though, Jahmyr Gibbs, if you remember, like David Montgomery was lighting it up, and then he got hurt. And then even that game that Montgomery missed, Gibbs wasn't that great. And then in the second half of the year, Gibbs came on and turned it on. That's actually another thing. Lions, running backs, the curse of Barry Sanders. I wrote about that going into last season, because if you look at the running backs the Lions have drafted in the top three rounds since Sanders retired, think about it. Javid Best, right? Maybe a good year or two. Kevin Jones, Kevin Smith, Michael LeSure, Amir Abdullah, DeAndre Swift, Kerryon Johnson, like they whiffed a ton since Sanders. Reggie Bush didn't get drafted by the Lions. He had maybe a good year or two with them in fantasy. And Best had maybe a good year or so, Swift maybe, showed some flashes and stuff like that, but they never accumulated great careers based on where they were drafted. I hope that Gibbs can certainly end that. Looked like he was, on his way last year. So, but that's another one of the fun little patterns and trends that I picked up on. I just love that stuff, man. I love historical stuff. Anytime I can bring in historical stuff, talk about what's going on right now, I'll always do it.
You hit me with a ghost of dynasty rosters past with Mikel LeShour, a name that I had not thought of in a very long time, but I probably had him. I absolutely loved that guy.
Yeah, I think he had like one okay season. You know,
he was good. Yeah, he had, I think it was an injury, right?
A lot of those guys had the injuries, like Javid Best had the concussions. A lot of those guys had some injury issues.
Yeah, LeShour had a suspension. That's right. That was his. But yeah, his rookie year was pretty good. 798 and 9 touchdowns.
Yeah,
34 receptions, 214 yards. Not bad. From Mikel LeShour, and then he literally played two games after that. So there we go. I wonder how
the Lions actually. You remember Billy Sims?
Remember Billy Sims, though.
No. Billy Sims was good, man. I mean, that was before Barry Sanders. Billy Sims was really good. Very good Lions running.
Well, before Barry Sanders, before Barry Sanders, I wasn't alive, so I feel pretty okay.
Wait. What year were you born?
85.
Okay, you know who Dan Marino was, right?
I know
he got drafted in 83, you know, right? I mean, you know who Fran Tarkenton is, right? You know who Fran Tarkenton is?
I know who he is. Yes, I know who Fran Tarkenton is. Yeah.
Right,
is Billy Sims? Hold on. Is Billy Sims on Fran Tarkenton and Dan Marino's level? Should I know who Billy? I know who John Riggins is.
Billy Sims was a really good running back in his time. Really good. Yeah. Go back and look at his numbers, man. He was a stud. I'm not talking about like Emmitt Smith type numbers, but he was a pretty damn good running back.
I'm going to be looking. I'm going to spend my lunch today looking at Billy
Sims. I'll throw names out there. You're like, what? Huh? Like, I'm just showing my age here, man.
No, that's good. One more here I wanted to talk about is the overpriced, because I think this guy's really interesting, and that's Stephon Diggs. And after Diggs was traded to Houston, I didn't really talk about him that much because I assumed that we were going to see Diggs, we were going to see Nico Collins, we were going to see Tank Dell, who was a little bit further down in the ADP. We're just going to see those guys fall is my assumption and what I assumed. And they've fallen a little bit. Diggs specifically has fallen more than the other guys. But, I mean, not really. Over at Underdog, Stephon Diggs is still the wide receiver 17. He's going right around the second and third round turn. Nico Collins is actually the wide receiver 15. He's a couple draft spots ahead of Diggs. And this is one of those situations where I look at all the talent there. Obviously, Tank Dell is coming back from a very serious injury, and we'll have to see what happens there. Obviously, he had the situation with a gunshot, which thankfully that seems like he's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. But we'll see where Tank Dell comes back. But we have Diggs here. We have Nico Collins here. And we have a Texans offense that quietly was not that interested in passing last season, even with C.J. Stroud doing what he was doing. Even if you just look at the second half of the season, so you take out a lot of that first half stuff, they were 17th in neutral pass rate. They were 1% under their expected pass rate. And so I look at that. I look at they just got Joe Mixon. I look at all of the talent there that they have at receiver, everybody they have to throw to. And I mean, it gets really tough for me to pay a second round price for Nico Collins or Stephon Diggs. And they feel a little bit overpriced to me.
I would agree. It's an embarrassment of riches, and it's not good in fantasy. I remember when the news broke that Diggs got traded there, and I'm like, damn it. Because not only does he cloud the value of Nico and Tank, but also, like, the Bills ain't got nothing. Like, I mean, okay, Keon Coleman, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to be, right? I mean, like,
great on Twitter. He's going to be great on Twitter.
I mean, he seems to have a personality, that's for sure. Yeah. But
that's the one.
My buddy Scott Barrett over at Fantasy Points had, you know, pointed out that, you know, when a guy at college does not have a yards per route run average of over 2, like, a lot of times they do not produce in the NFL. And Coleman was one of those guys who was under 2 in college. But he's volume, man. Volume's king in fantasy football. So the volume's going to be there. But, like, ultimately, like, if Curtis Samuel led the Bills wide receivers in fantasy points, would you be surprised? No. Like, we don't know. So it was a crappy move, except for C.J. Stroud, across the board from a fantasy perspective. It sucked for the Bills. It sucked for the Texans wide receivers. It's great for C.J. Stroud. But, like, for me, Nico Collins is a 1 that is now a 2. He was a 1. Now he's a 2. Diggs was a borderline 1 who's now more of, like, a borderline 2-3. And I think Dell's right there, like, in that 2-3 mix. I think probably I'd rather have Dell as a 3. You know, because Diggs is established, and I know, you know, he's what, 30 years old, in that range, but, like, still a really good player. The stats did go down in the second half of last year, but that was when Joe Brady took over and Joe Brady was running the ball more with James Cook. Things changed. I cannot see Bobby Slowick not just unleashing Stroud in that offense. They got some fun weapons there, man. The three guys we just mentioned, Joe Mixon, Dalton Schultz, giddy up. Best team in Texas, Jerry Jones.
Speaking of Curtis Samuel, Curtis Samuel saved my DFS season. I did not have a great DFS season last year, but I ended up still positive because Curtis Samuel against your Cowboys on Thanksgiving. Thank you, Curtis Samuel.
The Cowboys, we killed them, but like that was one of the games. The Cowboys killed all the crap teams, and I'm going to write an article about that. Like, you know, once we get closer to the season on Sports Illustrated about how. I mean, the Cowboys schedule, you got to play the AFC North this year. Oh my God. You know, like that, you could put four losses in the Cowboys column just from those four games right there. Right now, we did beat the Bengals with Cooper Rush recently. I will bring that up. right.
Cooper Rush.
You remember that? That was a couple of years. We beat the Bengals with Cooper Rush. When Dak was out. But you could say, oh, Cowboys are 0-4 right there, just in those four games. Back to the Texans. I mean, that wide receiver group is going to be very difficult to prognosticate every single week, because one week it'll be Diggs, and one week it'll be Collins, and one week it'll be Dell. Just who is it going to be more often than the others? We may not know that. Because Collins has the rapport, I've got him ranked ahead of Diggs and then Dell third among the Texans wide receivers.
And to your point, I do think I'm hopeful that they learned from last year with Stroud. Like that game they lost to the Panthers was really a game of them.
Oh my God. I remember that.
Not just giving it to Stroud, just give it to Stroud and let him go. And they didn't. And so that's why I took the second half of the season numbers with their passing kind of rate stats, because it did seem that they learned later on, but even that wasn't good. But like you said, the moves they've made this offseason suggest that they're going to go full in on Stroud, which means we might get enough passing volume here. And then on Diggs, I, a lot's going to be made of what he did at the end of last year, as you mentioned. But the first six games of last year, he was still amazing.
Yeah, and so it went from Dorsey to Brady, and Brady changed things up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so I do think there's arguments here for this offense. There's arguments just for the passing game in general. You know, CJ Stroud doesn't run as much as we would like from a fantasy quarterback in 2024, but you know, there could just be enough passing volume here and efficiency here that it doesn't matter. So there's arguments for this offense, but still, it gets tough.
CJ Stroud had the greatest rookie season for any quarterback who did not thrive as a runner in one way or another. Like, think about it. Cam Newton, hundreds and hundreds of rushing yards and touchdowns. RG3, same kind of thing. Even Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert had five rushing touchdowns in his rookie year. I believe it was five. Dak had six as a rookie. Like, you know, you go back to Vince Young. I mean, I can go back way back. All these guys who can run with the ball, who are, you know, mobile rushing quarterbacks, right? I mean, you could be mobile and not be a rushing quarterback. Just mobile means, you know, get out of the pocket when guys are chasing you. Stroud is not that guy. I mean, Stroud in his last year of college, I mean, he had almost all of his rushing yards in like one game against like Utah State or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but no, that was Bryce Young. But Stroud is not like a guy who you're going to design runs for. I mean, he just wasn't. And I mean, his rushing totals were okay, but he did not spike. He did not have a huge season as a rusher. And typically, when a rookie quarterback is going to make that fantasy impact, it is going to be in large part because he can run with the football. That's why I love Jaden Daniels. That's why Drake May, watch out. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be a stud in year one, but he may be able to give you a few games if he gets that starting job away from Jacoby Brissett. That stuff's important. You got to look at those rushing numbers when it comes to rookie quarterbacks, because they will help a guy pop. Rushing ability can turn an otherwise garbage quarterback, Tim Tebow, into a valuable fantasy asset. And I'm not saying that he was like uber valuable, but you could start Tim Tebow. Remember that game where Terrell Pryor started quarterback for the Raiders and he rushed for like over 100 yards? He was like, rushing ability is for a quarterback is huge. It's huge.
Yeah, Terrell Pryor, man. Terrell Pryor, I'm a Penn State fan. I have a long history of Terrell Pryor breaking my heart. Not picking us, then going, Terrell Pryor, hope you're doing well, man. Terrell Pryor broke my heart for many years. thank you very much for coming here, Michael Fabiano from Sports Illustrated, the Believe Fantasy Football Show with Michael Fabiano and Lindsay Rhodes. An amazing conversation. I really appreciate the tangents. You have done my ADHD brain very good, and I really appreciate that.
I'm crazy like that. Like, I mean, Deutsch should have known when he said, "Fabs, come on," because I mean, he listened to me on Sirius for long enough. He knows that I'll go off on crazy 80s tangents and talk about historical football stuff. Like, I just dig it. And I appreciate you, Ray, dealing with me. You're a very patient man. And as much fun as I had doing this podcast with you, may your Astros lose every game the rest of the year.
Fair enough. They've given me two. I'm fine now.
I know you're happy. I haven't had one in a while, so.
Yeah, give me two. I'm not even mad. No, I really do appreciate you coming on. Remember, we have our draft kit over at sharpfootballanalysis.com. That's going to have Todd's best ball rankings in there. So make sure you go and check that out. See who he thinks are overpriced, who's underpriced, and who you should target in your best ball drafts. Use promo code SAVE5. You get $5 off over at sharpfootballanalysis.com. And we'll be back to talk with you very soon.